we have another awesome episode for you today. We sit down with Byron and Angel. So this is a teacher edition episode, and we really get down into talking about different games you can use in your classroom to teach English. So in this episode, Byron and Angel share a little bit about the history of board games in Taiwan. They founded a board game company in 2015 in Taiwan. This episode is really great for English language teachers because Byron shares some expert techniques he used in his class. They are also hosting a workshop on STEAM education this September in Taiwan. So they host a lot of these kinds of workshops. So they share some helpful insight about STEAM education and board games. So a couple things to keep in mind when listening to this episode. We are all from Taiwan, so we talk about some different topics that are more specific to Taiwan. For example, we talk about a couple different cities that we've been to in Taiwan, and also we talk about the classroom culture and education culture in Taiwan. Now, these things are very specific to our teaching and our culture and our country that we're teaching in, but they likely apply to different teaching experiences in different countries. I'm sure that these experiences are not just unique to Taiwan. So listen in and let us know if you have some similar experiences. Also, we're still working to provide the best audio for you, so please be patient with us as we still understand the recording and audio editing process. So enough from me, let's listen to the interview.
Board Gaming with English. This is Board Gaming with English.
Teacher's Edition.
How exciting!
Welcome, everyone. This is Rich and Dustin with Board Gaming in English. And today is another Teacher's Edition. And today we are hosting two experts that use board games in their classes to help people learn all different subjects. So I'll let them introduce themselves. This is Byron and Angel. Nice to meet you both, and
yeah,
welcome.
Hi. Hello.
Would you guys just be able to quickly introduce yourselves? Like, where are you from?
Well, I'm Byron, and I'm from Australia. I came to Taiwan maybe 17 years ago. I studied music education, and I was teaching in Australia, and now teaching in Taiwan. In 2005, I started Kanga Games with Angel, the board game publishing and distribution company. And I also teach in high school, in Our Lady of Providence Girls High School in Xindian, and have been teaching there for about 16 years now. And I've also taught in cram schools and other places as well.
I'm Angel. I'm from Taiwan. I studied business administration, but I taught English many years ago, about university time. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then I teach mainly children for a couple years. And then because of board game business, we put effort in. So I kind of slowly stopped teaching and more focus on board game business.
So welcome again. I'm Dustin, and we want to start off the interview by starting with our new first segment that we're doing for this season, and we want you to tell us about a time so our listeners can maybe learn about a specific time that you've implemented a game or used a game to teach a lesson, to use it in your classroom, or any example that you've specifically used a game.
Okay, well, I've used a lot of board games in a classroom as teaching tools. One of them I've used for, it's called Who Would Win, and it's a great tool for teaching debate and public speaking. It's a card game, and in the cards there are characters, so you might draw something like Donald Trump and Darth Vader. Mm. But it's like a competition, who would win, Darth Vader or Donald Trump? And another set of cards are, what are they competing for? Like, what is the competition about? And for example, you might have Donald Trump and Darth Vader, who would be the best babysitter? At school, because we have debating and public speaking, and a lot of other schools have it as well, you can start with the very basics, like using because in a sentence or so in a sentence, like, I think Donald Trump would be a better babysitter because blah, 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 blah. and the other side can respond by saying, we think Darth Vader would be a better babysitter because blah, 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 blah.
But what are those blah, 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 blahs? Just curious.
Well, you'll have to go to one of the debates and you can find out. Yeah, so you can start from very simple language. You can do this with junior one students, because you just start with the basic sentence structure using because or so. And then as the years go on, you can add a higher level of grammar and a lot more material. And then finally, in the end, they should be pretty good public speakers. So usually I divide them into teams. They have time to create their argument, and they need to create at least 6 to 10 sentences using because or so. And so I start the timer, they're working as a team to create their argument, and then when time is up, one team needs to present their argument. And they're presenting this to the classroom, and one at a time they read each of their arguments. And I give them points if they have created a sentence and the grammar is correct. So they get points for that, even if they don't win the argument. And then the other team goes and presents their argument, and they have their 6 to 10 sentences, which I give them a point for if it's correct. And then finally, the class can vote which team they feel presented a better argument. But of course, in a classroom, you're going to have students which might favor their friends or something like that. So the teacher also has a vote, which is worth much more than all the students. And then you can then change teams, and now it's team C and team D that have a debate.
Do you think that most students participate when you do things like this, like if they're in groups?
Yeah, well, perhaps when they're in a group creating their argument, maybe some of them might sit back, but sometimes they might even speak Chinese to present an idea to their teammates, but then the stronger students will write that down. And when I have them at the front of class presenting their argument, saying one of the sentences that they created as a group.
Yeah, I think that's really good. It builds their confidence, even if they're like a weak student. At least, at minimum, they're talking and they're being engaged in the class.
Yeah, I think that's important with all the games that I use in the classroom. I think it's very important that everyone is involved, and you can't let those shy, quiet students sit back while the more dominant ones take over. No matter what game I'm playing, I always make sure that everyone has a turn, everyone contributes something. So even if it's a quiz show or something and they're in teams, I give them each a number, like you're number 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. And on this team, you're number 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. And so then I can just say, this is for person number 1. So only person number 1 can answer that question. Right. Yeah, and then next time I can say, this is for person number 2, and so on. So that means everyone is involved.
And what was the name of the game?
Who would win?
Who would win? Mm. Very, sounds very, I guess the structure, the lesson that you could use, snake oil. It's where you get two words. One's an adjective, one's a noun, and you have to sell it to someone. So it's very debate focused as well.
Mm.
Your game would be an awesome, I think, introduction to the debate.
Yeah, well, I'm teaching in high school, junior high school and senior high school. So especially in junior high school, it's difficult to say, okay, stand in front of the class and talk about apples. They're just going to stand there and not know what to say because you're just putting them on the spot. So I think the good thing about who would win, and probably with lots of games, you just need to simplify it and bring it down to their level.
Mm.
Yeah, and I think junior high school students are the most competitive people in the world. So
oh, yes. Yeah.
They would want to win that debate.
Yeah, it can get quite crazy in class. Yeah, and they can be quite creative as well with their arguments as well.
You gave us an example of a game.
I have another game.
You have other games. So, yeah. Well... How do those games, or maybe we'll let you, let's hear about the other two examples, or
okay.
A couple more?
Well, another one is called a Magidice. It's more a tool than a board game. It's a set of dice, 12 dice, and they all have different images on. And each dice represents, different categories. For example, one could be feelings, one could be places, one could be nature, one. So there are many different kinds of dice. This game comes with a whole booklet of 40 lesson plans for use in the classroom. But they're more for grammar classes and vocabulary classes, and it's to use it as a tool. But I use it more for a game activity called Grammar Dash. Maybe we've been working on a sentence pattern. It could be like using past continuous with past tense. Like, when I was walking in the park, I saw a cat. If in a regular class you just ask a student to go up to the front of the classroom and say, okay, write a sentence using past continuous and past tense, they're just going to stand there going, what can I write? They can write anything, but it's just human nature. We just, our minds go blank and it's like, well, what should I write? What's the right thing to write? Mm-hmm. They don't know what to do. So it's where these dice come in useful. I give them two dice and they roll it. And I usually divide the class into teams again for this one. And I have one person from each team come to the front of the class and they roll the dice. And everyone who's at the front of the class can look at the dice, and using those images, they create the sentence. So they might see some trees on one dice and they might see a dog on another dice. So they quickly race to write a sentence like, when I was, what was it? It was a dog and a...
walking in the
what
forest.
What did I say? It was a dog and trees. Oh, okay, yes. Yeah, maybe when I was walking in the forest, I saw a dog.
Mm.
Yeah. Now, with a lot of games that people play in the class, usually it's whoever is the fastest will win, will get the points. But that means the students, the three or four other students who are slower, don't get any chance. And if you play the game long enough, they'll probably just give up going, oh, that person's going to be faster. So, you know, why try? So what I do is I don't award it only to the fastest person. I give them a time limit for them to create their sentence. And if you're the fastest, yeah, you get a point. But if you still finish your sentence within the time, you can also get a point as long as the sentence is correct. So if you're focusing on past tense and past continuous tense, and they need to have both of those in a sentence, if they write a good sentence and it's correct, yay, they get a point. So if you're the fastest but you wrote an incorrect sentence, you just get 1 point for being the fastest. But someone else might also get a point because they wrote a correct sentence. Then you can also throw in extra things, like if you use a verb in your sentence, or if you a new verb that no one else has used yet, because you don't want one person to write, when I was walking in the park, and then for the rest of the game, everyone is using walking.
The same thing, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So I give a point if they use a new verb, so they need to think of something different that the other students haven't written yet.
I think that's great. Like, as you said, like, it keeps all the students part of the game. It's like no one's out of the game.
Well, their teammates are... It's only one person from each team up on stage writing on the blackboard, but their teammates are usually screaming out stuff to them, and then they're trying to listen to them, and they're also trying to think. But I think the good thing is the students up there, because they know, as long as I finish the sentence in the time, I can try and be creative and try to think of a verb that hasn't been used before. And also later in the game, I might say, okay, now I'm giving a point for every adjective you use in your sentence. Or maybe if you use one or more adjectives, I'll give you a point. So now instead of just saying, when I was walking in the jungle, I saw a dog, they would write, when I was walking in the scary jungle, I saw a beautiful black dog.
I like that they acted out too.
That's nice. So they start being a bit more creative because they want to get more points. So they might not be the fastest, but they can still get more points than the fastest team because they spent a little more time to think more creatively. And then after the points are awarded, they sit down, a new person comes up, and we roll the dice again.
You said you had one more?
Well, there are many other ways that I use a magic dice as well. But yeah, I can go to the next game. The next game is Striker Pose.
Striker Pose.
Yeah, Striker Pose. It's kind of like a game of statues where you need to be a statue. Again, because I use these games in a classroom, I try to have, if possible, I try to have the whole class involved in the same game. Because if you, especially with junior high school or even senior high school, if you just give each table of six or seven students a game and say, okay, play, and only use English and follow the rules, and you're going to have chaos. You're going to have students who are speaking Chinese, you're going to have students who are not playing correctly, you're going to have students who are purposely trying to ruin the game. It's going to be a bit chaos, and it's a bit difficult for one teacher to manage, especially if you have a classroom of, some schools have like 40 students in a class.
Yeah.
I'm lucky enough to be in a school where we divide the classes into two. So we have about 20 to 25 students in a class. So we can arrange them in teams of five or six students. So for Striker Pose, again, the game is for a group of people to sit around a table and play with your friends, right? But just like Who Would Win as well, it's designed for a table of friends to play. But as a teacher, you need to make adjustments, and I adjust the game to be used in the classroom setting. So Striker Pose, I arrange them into teams. And the basic idea of the game is we have a list of vocabulary. There are many, many, many cards, and each card is a different category. And like, for example, a category might be occupations. So there would be, on the card, there's seven occupations. If you've been teaching this topic in class, you can use this game for occupations. But there are many, 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 I think more than 200 cards of different categories. And even occupations, there are three or four different cards with occupations on. And again, you can adjust it going, well, this occupation doesn't make sense to use in my class, so I'll change that to dentist, because we've been talking about dentists. So you can adjust it. So basically, you have seven occupations which are on the board. You can use like a PowerPoint or just write them on the blackboard. So everyone looks at those. You can make sure the whole class understands the vocabulary that's on the board, and then send one team out and they go out of the classroom, or just send them somewhere where they can't watch what's going on. Because the next thing you do is one person from each team goes to the front of the class and you give them a card with a number on, and the number corresponds to one of the occupations that's on the board. Usually there are less students than there are occupations, so maybe there are four students at the front of the class and there are seven occupations to choose from. So there'll be some occupations that won't be acted out. Students each get a card randomly, and they look at the card, and you can make sure that they understand which occupation they are and what that occupation is. So once they all understand, you can also give them a little bit of time to think about what statue they can be without talking, without moving, without nodding or anything, in order to tell the team that just went outside what they are, what occupation they are. So sometimes they need to think outside the box, because an occupation might be similar to someone else's occupation. And like if you have pilot and bus driver, you might have two students who are in a similar position. So you need to think of something that will make it very obvious what your job is. So maybe instead of pretending you're flying a plane, maybe you pretend you are the plane. So I like this because they need to think outside of the box. And also it's good to review vocabulary. Once they've all know what they are, we call in the team, they make a line, and I give them a time limit. And when I say, go, one at a time, they need to pick up the cards. There are cards numbered 1 to 7. And they need to go, okay, I think you are a pilot. And you give the card to that statue. They immediately sit down. Then the next person in line looks at the cards. So again, this is where I want everyone involved. I don't just have, okay, your team needs to give the cards, and then we have one dominant student doing all the work. I get them to line up, and one at a time, they look at the statues, they look at the cards, and they give the card to the right player.
Where did you like learn of this game? Because it is pretty interesting. I think it's like really interactive for students. Did you think of it on your own? Did you find this game just through other people? Or
through Kanga Games,
our
company.
There you go.
Yeah, all of them are Kanga Games games. So it's games that we imported or we publish, and we always learn about our products because we're selling them. So we try them, we learn how to play them, and a lot of them I see, wow, I can use this in class. And so I use it and make changes. And that one's Strike a Pose from one of the publishers we represent here.
So with Kanga Games, right? Kanga,
yeah.
I want to say Kanga, but Kanga, right? Like kangaroo, right?
Yes, like kangaroo, not kangaroo. Yeah, kangaroo.
How does Kanga Games and your background in education, you kind of mentioned how you'll find a game and you'll see how it might work in your class. Do you find that helpful?
Well, I think when we first started Kanga Games, I think we saw, and why we started Kanga Games was because we saw the benefits in board games, and especially for Taiwan, I think, because in other countries like the USA, Australia, UK, and European countries, board gaming is already big over there, and lots of people are doing it. Families are playing together. It's something you might have even grown up doing, playing Monopoly or some other games with your family and with your friends. But in Taiwan, back in 2005, there wasn't really a lot of board games here. And we would bring board games to different events and to friends, and they would go, hey, where did you get this? This is really fun. And then we would get it for them. And then we thought, maybe we can make a business from this. Because in Taiwan, online gaming is really big, playing computer games, playing with your cell phone. It's not good for social skills. So playing board games actually develops social skills, and we thought, yeah, this is great, and this is something that would be good for society as a whole, as well as for use in the classroom as teaching tools.
Yeah, it's when we moved here in Taiwan 3 years ago, and since we've moved, I've noticed, I think, 3 board game cafes in 3 years, and that's just what I've noticed that have started. There's one over near us, and then a couple others, but yeah, it's a growing industry in Taiwan, I think.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, when we started, I think there was only maybe 2 or 3 places in Taipei where you could play board games, and maybe a few in other cities and places around Taiwan. But now we have
a lot.
Yeah, we have like 200 retailers selling board games in Taiwan. So. And that's just Taiwan. and in Taipei, there are many, many, many board game cafes now.
Yeah, there's... I mean, and I've seen Kanga Games in other cafes, too, that aren't, like, board game cafes, but they have some games, and I've seen some Kanga games there, too. So what does Kanga work with any community in Taiwan, or the education side, or...?
Yes, we do. We do it quite a lot. We do workshops for teachers where we visit schools. Usually this is in cooperation with a book publishing company, and they invite us to go to the school to talk about using board games in the classroom. We do run workshops ourselves, which we invite teachers to from a lot of different backgrounds. Maybe they're a high school teacher or elementary school teacher or cram school teacher, or maybe they run summer programs or something. So we run these, which is open for all teachers. We work with teachers directly as well. Like last weekend, we had an event with a teacher from Miaoli, where she invited families to come and play, particularly fathers, because it was Father's Day earlier this month in Taiwan. So we ran an event with her. We also run events with math teachers. There are many groups of math teachers around Taiwan. Like each city or town might have a group where math teachers meet, and they discuss lessons and teaching methods and resources, and it's a sharing of information. So we often go to those events to show the games which focus mostly on mathematics. That's for education.
Mm.
Yeah.
Do you have any professional developments coming soon, or?
Yes, we do. Yeah, we have a workshop September and November. One's in Taipei. One's in
Kaohsiung.
Yeah, and that's based on STEAM and using board games in the classroom.
Can you explain STEAM just a bit? Because I think like the A is kind of new to people in STEAM. Like I remember it being just STEM,
which STEM,
is science, technology, engineering, and math. And now we have
R.
The A
R
is and math.
And math.
No. Yes, now it's art. Well, I think most teachers probably understand what STEM and even STEAM,
mm-hmm.
that it represents science, technology, engineering, art, and math. But I think some people might miss some important aspect of what STEAM is about. For me, STEAM is more about grabbing the opportunity to teach something. For example, a music teacher might be teaching rhythm. You might be familiar with teachers using like ta, ti, ti, ta, ta, or or even the actual name like whole note, half note, quarter note, eighth notes for rhythm. But when you hear me say whole note, half note, quarter note, eighth note, what else does it make you think of? What other subject?
Math,
exactly. Yeah, so I think that's a big part of what STEAM is about. When a music teacher is teaching whole notes, half notes, quarter notes, eighth notes, you can also take this opportunity to teach fractions. Maybe in an elementary school, the elementary school teacher isn't the music teacher, but they can coordinate. They can work together and go, well, I'm going to be teaching rhythm right now, and I'm going to be talking about whole notes, half notes, quarter notes, eighth notes. Why don't you focus on fractions in your math class? And especially in high school, you need to coordinate with other teachers when you're working with STEAM. For example, maybe the woodworking class, in some schools they have woodworking. I don't know, did you have woodworking
in
high school? Yeah. Yeah, and maybe they made something out of wood. And as you know, the triangle is the strongest shape. So with woodwork, they probably used triangles in their something they built. Perhaps the math teacher might say, hey, in your woodworking class, you made this. I can use that to teach geometry. Then maybe the science teacher can say, oh, I can also use that to teach something about physics.
Mm-hmm.
The math teacher can use that woodworking project to teach something about math. And they all work together. And I think that's the second important thing, I think, about STEAM, is that students will realize that what they learn in school is everywhere. And they won't be asking the question, why am I learning this? I'll never use it. But actually, when they see that, wow, fractions are in music, we just don't see it so clearly, okay? And many other things that they learn, they can go, wow, this is everywhere. That's why we're learning this.
I think you explained that like perfectly, actually.
Oh.
Like, I mean, I don't think my principal listens to the podcast, but, you know, and sometimes in the schools, they're always STEAM, STEM, STEAM, the STEMs.
And yeah, yeah.
Sometimes it just seems like words, and teachers tend to, maybe we roll our eyes a little, like, oh, yeah, okay. But I think the way you explained it is really what it's going for, right? It's like, it's always around, and you need all these skills in order to build an education. So I think what you said was like perfect.
And I think it's making, just opening students' eyes to see that what they learn in school is important.
Mm.
It's not something that's useless. You won't just go walking around the planet naive to why everything is the way it is. You,
mm-hmm.
you will actually understand some of the world around you.
Maybe those flat earthers didn't take any STEAM classes.
They still could listen to our podcast.
What? The world's not flat.
What We're secluding those flat earthers.
We blacklisted.
Oh, you mentioned Conga does some workshops too, and your next one is STEAM focused. If I attended the workshop, what would I expect to like gain from the workshop or learn from attending?
Well, our workshop is going to focus on two games. Each game, we've prepared lesson plans that cover science, technology, engineering, art, and math. And of course, in art, it also includes music. For example, we're going to focus on tallow and manifold. So for tallow, we've created lessons that cover all of those subjects. I think for some games, some teachers might see, oh yeah, this game is I can use for STEAM because it teaches math, or it teaches maybe math and something else. And tallow is a game where, wow, this game is great for math. Children would play it, even adults play the game, and you don't really realize that you are practicing math. But I think a lot of people don't see that there's a whole lot more that you can use this game for, and there's a whole lot more that you can teach using this game as a tool, which I think a lot of people don't see. And like I mentioned with STEAM, that to me, one of the important factors of STEAM is grabbing an opportunity to teach something. And when you use like tallow in the classroom, they enjoy the game, they have fun playing the game, then you can kind of harness that positive experience they're having with the game and use the game to teach something about science. You can use the game to teach something about technology. So all of these lessons are based around this game and using the game to teach each of these subjects.
You mentioned you started Conga Games in 2005, right?
Yeah.
I've consciously been thinking about how to implement games in my lessons for only like 2 years now. When I first started teaching, I would always try to see, well, how can I engage my students? And sometimes that led to games, sometimes it didn't. But now that I've really been involved in playing board games a lot more, I always try to see how I can take elements and adapt them. But I think maybe since, if you've been doing it since 2005, you must be a master at taking a game and applying it across different subjects.
Yeah, it takes some work to adapt a game to make it useful in the classroom, and also make it, and also you need to carefully plan. Just like any teacher making a lesson plan for a new lesson you're going to do, you need to time everything, you need to plan everything well. It's the same when you're using a board game in the classroom. You need to plan all the steps, and perhaps you need to change the vocabulary, make it the correct level.
Yeah, adding game, it's not less work, I think. Like, it's not a time killer, right? We need to, as teachers, we need to realize how does this game work in our class, and we also need to become experts at the game. We can't just learn the basics of it and then throw it in the classroom. We have to know like everything about the game, then we can bring it into class.
Yeah, you need to be ready for anything that might happen during the game.
If a teacher for the first time wants to use a board game in their class, what would you recommend to them? Like, what's the one thing they need to remember if they're going to use a board game in their classroom for the first time?
One thing to remember? I have a list of things for them to remember.
It could be more than one. It could be your biggest advice to them, maybe.
Yeah, well, I think what's important is that the first time you use a board game in class is that it is successful. So that's why you really need to plan it carefully. Because if the whole class goes crazy, you lose control, or students cheat and you haven't planned a way to handle that kind of situation, and it can really spoil the game. And then next time, if you tell your students, hey, we're going to play a game, they're probably going to roll their eyes going, oh, yes, all of that's going to happen again. So I think it's important that it's successful. So you really really do need to be careful on how you plan it. And you need to have consequences if someone cheats or someone is misbehaving or kind of ruining this experience for everybody. You also need to make sure it runs smoothly, so there's no stopping. You know, just like in a classroom, if you need a CD player, you make sure you have one and you make sure it's working right before class. You don't kind of stop halfway through class and say, oh, where's the CD player? Oh, Jane, can you go and find one for me? And then you've lost the student's attention. And the same thing is for a board game. You need to make sure it flows so you don't lose their attention. You keep them focused. You keep them on task. You make sure they're behaving. Using something like this is a reward. It's a privilege.
Mm-hmm.
It's not something you would use in every single class. If you make it clear to them that, hey, this activity is a privilege, if you spoil it, we're not going to do it next month or next week. And you need to stand by those rules.
But I like games.
Yeah. But sometimes you need to teach them about behaving well and
right.
respecting each other. So.
All right, so the last question. It's a more lighthearted question. And Angel, feel free to answer if you want to also. We'll start with Byron. If you were trapped on a desert island and you can only choose three games, so you have the players needed to play the game. It can be anybody you want to play the game with you. As soon as the game is over, they have to leave the island. What three games would you choose?
We really limit people on and the amount of things they can do.
It's a special deserted island.
Okay, well, one game, how many games?
Three.
Okay, well, one game would obviously be Forbidden Island. because it's a great cooperative game where you're trying to collect artifacts before the island sinks. So I guess it would give you a really positive outlook on your situation. Maybe that, hey, at least this island's not sinking.
No, if you play that game, if you lose, the island sinks. That's the extra stipulation.
Oh, yeah.
So Forbidden Island and...
Yeah, Forbidden Island. Another game would be Yo-Ho.
Yo-Ho.
Haven't heard of it.
No. Okay, well, it's one of the games we publish. So you can check it out on our
check
website.
It out for sure.
It's a kind of a trick-taking game,
mm-hmm.
and it's the theme is pirates. You're trying to gather pirates to make a crew for your ship, and you need to tell the Pirate King how many ships you need. So, in another way, basically you're estimating how many tricks you will win.
Okay.
Like that's how many ships you need,
mm-hmm.
because how many crew you will make, or how many tricks you will win. So if you're right, you get bonus points. If you're wrong, you get a black spot, which at the end of the game are minus points.
Yeah.
But it's a long game, but you're always involved and it's always fun from the beginning to end. Because like the first round, everyone just has one card. So all you can say is whether you'll win once or whether you'll win no time. And then the next time everyone has two cards. And you need to say how many tricks you'll win, one or two or zero. And sometimes if you say you'll win zero times, you get extra bonus points. So in this game, it's good to lose. So actually you plan to lose.
Forbidden Island, Yo-Ho.
Yo-Ho. And another one... Zooronga.
Zooronga?
Zooronga.
I think we played that one.
Oh, yeah!
At the...
Yeah, we played that at the
festival.
Kaohsiung Midnight...
Moonlight Festival.
Yeah, and that's... I really like that game. Even though I lose most of the time, I always... oh, I think that was the first time I'd won it. Yeah, but even though I lose that game most of the time, I always enjoy playing it. So I think that's why I would probably have that on the island as well. Because I like building a zoo and getting the animals I want in my zoo. And
maybe you'll win if you're on that desert island long enough.
Yeah.
We don't know.
You can invite Dusty.
Yeah, there you go.
How about you?
Well, the first game I would like to have is Striker Pose, because stuck in island is boring, it's not fun. So Striker Pose, you need to make statue.
Hmm.
I like it, and then, you know.
Maybe SOS would be the number.
Yeah, yeah, everything, because the topic, lots of different topics, and I like it. So everyone needs to be a statue, so it'll be fun. And the second one is we have a game called We Will Rock You.
Hmm.
Yeah, and it's a fun game as well. People need to do the gestures that you have, and then keep yourself on beat, right?
Yeah.
Like that, we will rock you. Yeah, and everyone need to do the same action at the same time. And then you need to do your gesture, and then copy, and then do other people's gestures, and then you need to, on beat, you need to follow. Yeah, so it's fun. And then people go faster and faster. Yeah, so you can imagine.
It gets exciting and crazy.
Something like that, yeah. So make an island noisy. The first one is Forbidden Island, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, because really it's the island one.
Yeah.
So you're on the island and you need to cooperate. Yeah.
Sticks with the theme, so.
Mm. Yeah. So there's three games I play.
Awesome. So before we go, if our listeners want to contact either of you, where might they find you, or do you have any upcoming projects? Anything?
Well, they can visit our website. We have a website, www.kangagames.com. That's Kanga, like kangaroo, Kanga Games. And we also have a Facebook page, so they can just go on Facebook and search for Kanga Games again, and they should find us. We also have a YouTube channel, Kanga TV, so you can
search
for Kanga Games or Kanga TV on YouTube.
A really good actor on that TV channel.
Oh yeah. And the animations. Unbelievable. Now they'll have to go see what all the fuss is about.
Yeah.
Your views are gonna spike.
Might get an Oscar nomination later this year.
Awesome. And then you said the workshop's coming up as well?
Yeah. We have two workshops coming up. You can find information about that on our Facebook page or also on our website. There's a link on there where you can go to our advert, which has all the dates and information and signing up.
All right. Awesome.
Yeah.
Thank you very much for stopping by and being willing to share.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for coming. It was great. And thank you, audience, for listening to Board Gaming with English. And we hope to see you all next week.
Thank you for listening to another Teacher Edition episode of Board Gaming with English. We'll be back next week with a Student Edition episode. These episodes are great for English learners to practice and improve their English with board games. They're also great supplemental materials for your lessons. Also, be sure to join our Facebook groups. We have a couple different Facebook groups, game-based learning in education, and also playing board games and other games to learn English. The games-based Facebook group is for teachers, while the other group, playing board games to learn English, is for students. And please, as always, we love to hear from you. You can find us on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter, Board Gaming with English, or BGE Games. And remember, our email is dandr@boardgamingwithenglish.com. All right, thank you, and we'll be back next week.